Hello, this is Susan Smith Nash, and you are listening to The Fringe Journal. Tonight's episode is Halcyon Days. December 28th, 1974. When I stopped the bicycle I had borrowed for the day from the Palm Springs Hotel, where Dad and I were staying, I felt sweat dribble down my back. After breakfast, he left with business associates to meet at an office, inspect properties, review documents. I wasn't quite sure why he had come to Palm Springs between Christmas and New Year's Day. I knew it had to do something with what had to be done before the end of the year, and that it involved mining operations, gold mining operations, in the mountains near the Big Bear ski resort. The name of the company was Atajo Resources. Atajo means shortcut in Spanish. And, coincidentally, a shortcut was what I had been seeking as I rode the 10-speed racing bicycle down wide, sidewalked streets until I found the blacktop highway that led to the riding stables. I had decided to kill a few hours by going horseback riding in the canyons. Dad told me that there were two separate oases at the end of the trail. The first would be easy to find, with palm trees and a waterfall cascading down a cliff formed by the San Andreas Fault. As I pulled up to the stables, I saw a clutch of horses in the shade next to the stables. One was drinking water. Another, a gelding, shook his head, long mane rippling. I chained my bicycle to a bike rack and walked to the small office located in a room on the side of the main stable area. "Do you know how to ride?" asked a sun-leathered blonde woman in jeans, well-worn ostrich boots. "Well, I'm from Oklahoma," I ventured, as though that explained anything at all. It was assumed that anyone from Oklahoma or Texas was born in a Western saddle. The truth was, I didn't really ride often. The last time I spent any time on horseback was when I was 7 years old, and my family and I were spending the summer in Lovelock, Nevada. My best friend lived on a small farm that adjoined a dry lake bed. She had two very gentle horses. We would saddle up and take long rides out on the lake bed, where we would explore the periphery. It always amazed me that the lake soil consisted of small shells. Shells! Yes, tiny ones and large ones, diatomaceous earth. "You know, these were once inland seas," Dad explained. "The Great Salt Lake in Utah is one of them. It used to be a part of what this enormous lake system called Lake Bonneville." "Seas? In the desert?" I asked. Frankly, I couldn't imagine it, except in a fairy tale, or in Noah terms. Well, it didn't matter. These, actually, turned out to be my halcyon days, before bad things happened, before I started losing my dreams to the tremors that took me under the surface of consciousness like a dark baptism, and which left me riddled with shame at best, and at worst, true self-hatred. That was the summer after which overcompensatory activities began to define me. After months and years of that, I didn't even know who or what I was seeking to be. I just wanted to feel something besides pain when people looked at me. We live in the land of the lotus and poppy. We vegetate calm and aesthetic on the beach, on the sand, in the sun. I read Ogden Nash. I loved Halcyon Days. The idea of letting 2 7-year-old girls take unaccompanied horseback rides into a huge, dry lake was pretty astonishing in retrospect, but it seemed normal at the time. When we returned, I was always hungry. My friend's mom would prepare biscuits and molasses, a treat I found to be very odd. Mother had, by that time, completely converted to organic foods and was always whipping up shakes consisting of powdered milk, water, brewer's yeast, vitamin E, and honey to accompany raw carrot sticks, celery, and soy milk cheese. Yum! No wonder anything that my friend's mom could offer was delightful. When Dad was in town, our diet shifted to what amounted to be prototypical fast food. We went to Jonesy's Drive-In for dinner, followed by Baskin-Robbins. The woman gestured toward one of the horses. It was a dark brown gelding. It was the one I had noticed. "Do you think you can handle Chopper?" she asked me. I noticed her jeans had a crease down the middle as though she had pressed them with an iron. Her ostrich cowboy boots were unusual enough, exquisitely tooled, and she wore heirloom quality turquoise jewelry. I wondered how many people knew what this symbolized. "Chopper?" I asked. "Yeah, he's the tall one over there," she said. "He gets pretty excited when he hears motorcycles, so be careful." "Do I have any other choices?" I asked. "Well, if you want to come back at 1, we'll have a few more." It was 9 a.m. I didn't want to wait. "Okay, Chopper looks fine to me," I said. "So, where are the oases?" "Oh, they're easy to find. Just follow the trail. The horse won't want to go, and you will have to insist." We exchanged the money, then walked over to the horse. A young guy with long hair, wearing a Vietnam battle jacket, was already saddling Chopper. He was probably about 24 years old, but his face was weathered like a 40-year-old. He had a scar on his neck. "Where are your boots?" he asked. "I didn't bring any," I said, truthfully, probably regretting having told the truth. I was starting to feel a little uncomfortable. I was wondering if all of this would be a problem. "Huh," he said. "Well, by the way, Chopper used to be a racehorse." Alarmed flashed across my face. The Vietnam vet broke into laughter. Ha! That's a joke. Chopper's actually a good guy. We go into the mountains and talk to each other. You know, Chopper has got a lot to tell. Once secured in the wide and rather loose western saddle, I felt my knees shake. I had forgotten how to ride. Worse than that, I was a bit afraid of Chopper. He did not seem to like having the saddle tight around him, and I couldn't seem to get the stirrups right. If Dad knew I was doing this, he would be quite upset. What if you start to seize, Ophelia? I won't have my equipment around. I could hear him saying that. Ironically, the equipment Dad used for his geophysical research, with its pulsing light and plasma flash crackles, did not trigger seizures. Instead, strangely enough, looking into the flashing arrhythmic bolts and blasts smoothed out my brain waves, and instead of knotting myself into a ball of pure agony and shame, I felt my muscles slowly uncurl, slowly establish a new equilibrium. It was like being released from jail after a long, enormous incarceration. Erroneous incarceration, for that matter. Okay, little missy, you're going to have to take control here. Don't be afraid. She slapped Chopper on the rump to get him started. Signal him to go. Okay, do it. Enjoy. The first part of the trail was straightforward enough, but it quickly became challenging as we entered a narrow arroyo and the canyon walls rose up starkly around us. There was clear evidence of recent flash floods in the form of boulders and rocks, even in the middle of the path. In addition to rocks, there were little eroded gullies caused by waters flowing across. It was clear that Chopper loathed this trail. He kept trying to turn around. I did not want to go back. Although the path was steep and tricky, it was clear we were ascending to something shady and interesting that lay just around the bend. I urged Chopper on. He grudgingly picked up the pace. The stirrup was rubbing against my ankle. I could feel a blister forming. I gripped harder with my knees and felt the saddle slip a bit. My heart pounded. This was work, and I was definitely transgressing the will of the horse. Chopper froze dead in the trail, almost catapulting me over his head and into the sage, yucca, and prickly pear. The unmistakable buzz of a rattlesnake whirred, echoing on the canyon walls. Sadly, it was impossible to tell where it was coming from. Chopper! Chopper! It's okay, boy! It's okay! It's okay! It's okay, boy, Chopper! I leaned forward and tried to soothe him with my voice. Chopper was having none of that. He stamped his legs, started backing up. I was in danger of falling off. My tennis shoes did not slot the stirrups like cowboy boots, and I had lost my balance. The rattlesnake was on the edge of the trail directly ahead of us. I pulled the rein to the side fairly sharply, hoping that Chopper hadn't actually seen the snake. I needed to turn him around immediately. Hanging on for dear life, I got him turned around, and he started trotting downhill back to the stables. Great, but my legs would not stop trembling. Once we were back into the flat field, we did a few circles. First, trotting, then walking. Tell me your stories, Chopper. Tell them. If there were stories, I didn't hear them. We did stop at a little copse of trees where a tiny little pool of strangely fresh water bubbled up between the rocks. Chopper put his head down and drank deeply. I could feel tears of relief spill down my cheeks. In the rippling reflection, I saw sparkles of light between the flickering through the broad-leaved trees. The horse's face was barely visible, but through a trick of light and optics, my chest, shoulder, and face rippled on the side. Chopper led the way back to the stable. He walked at first, then trotted as we neared the saddling up area. "Just an hour? I thought you were planning on a couple of hours," said the leathery woman. Well, I decided I needed to get back," I said. The guy in the Vietnam battle jacket had just walked behind the stables. "Well, I hope you enjoyed it. Your bike's in the sun now. It might be kind of hot," she said. I looked down at my dirty socks and muddy tennis shoes. Blood from the burst blisters was pinking them, and even though I had been on horseback for less than 1 hour, my thigh muscles felt rubbery and burning. Thank you for listening. This is Susan Smith Nash, The Fringe Journal. This is the end of this episode, but there will be more. I'm not promising you that they're going to be in any kind of easy-to-follow sequence. However, eventually I will put them together into some kind of order that creates an actual narrative thread that you can follow. In the meantime, I'm thrilled to be able to give you the fragments and the scruffy pieces of paper that I transcribe. All those things, I'm just thrilled to be able to share them. And at any rate, thank you very, very much for listening. Again, this is Susan. I'll talk to you soon.